Mini episode 1642 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FDH Lounge. It's our breakthrough of the divisions for 2023 in the NFL. We've got right now the 2023 AFC North preview. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here with my fellow FDH Lounge original dignitary Chris Galloway. We gave you our first segment here on the AFC North, our overarching thoughts for the season, and we'll look back at the offseason. Go check that out. The rest of our divisional previews are just targeted to that division here. We're moving through each of these one by one. And we're using as the basis for this the one run-on sentence for each team that you can find in Fantasy Football Draftology 2023, available on the main page of fantasydrafthelp.com. So here are the run-on sentences for each team in the AFC North heading into this year. By the way, written before the preseason games had started, so there's going to be one that kind of jumps out at you here as being a little bit off from the way I wrote it, and that's the first one here, my preseason pick to win the division at that time, Cincinnati. A team that made the Super Bowl in the 2021 season had fewer roster issues in 2022 and has fewer still now, and along with their proven winner quarterback, stand astride a rough division and perhaps the entire conference. Obviously, that was written before Joe Burrow went down. Everything remains up in the air with him, at least perceptually. We'll talk about that as we go along. Baltimore. The Lamar drama is now over, but everyone is very premature in believing that Odell is still Odell, and that the team has thus addressed its glaring weakness at wide receiver, albeit the bigger vulnerabilities are actually on defense, albeit the Ravens still project as a playoff team. Absolutely everything hinges on the deal with the devil at quarterback, since the team low-key has arguably less potential holes than any other team in the league, and the biggest coordinator upgrade in the entire league to work with 2022's heinously underachieving defense. Pittsburgh. Kenny Pickett is just another guy, which is fatal in a division like this, and with more holes defensively than the football honks would have you believe, this team is doomed for the cellar. And that's the thing, when I look at this, Chris, it's very interesting mirror images here, and it's kind of funny because neither team is a team that I like at all personally when you're talking about Pittsburgh or New England, but both of these teams, to me, and the divisions that they're in seem like wrong place, wrong time, as far as the other teams.
Yeah, I agree with you there. To me, the Steelers, and there's been so much. And again, you get the benefit of the doubt when you're a winning franchise, when you have a head coach who's never had a losing season. And there's all this hype over a guy that I just keep looking at as average.
Right.
Like, I have so much off-season hype on how great Kenny Pickett's going to be. And I'm like,
you got to be kidding me.
I'm like, Jacoby Brissett was better last year.
Right.
Like I know he was a rookie, and I will grade that on a curve. Totally understand, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but also, here's the shocking thing. Do you know who had a better rookie year at quarterback than Kenny Pickett?
Who did?
Statistically?
Who?
Johnny Manziel.
Well, handful of games.
And I keep looking at it going, I didn't see it last year.
Right.
All this offseason hype that just fellatio of this guy by the national media, I'm just like, I'm looking at it going, there are some things on this team, right?
Right.
Defensive line. Massive question marks at linebacker.
Right.
Nobody wants to talk about that. Like, your linebackers look like garbage. Line's good, right? But they're all another year older. Hayward's another year older. I mean, like, okay, at some point, like, that's going to catch up. They improved their offensive line last year, no doubt.
Right.
George Pickens You know me. I said that going into that draft. I loved that kid coming out of Georgia. And I think, you know, proven right. Like, he is the real deal. But I don't see Pickett as the guy who's going to lead them. I just don't see it. So I'm with you. I've got the Steelers in the basement of the division at 8-9. It's still Mike Tomlin. They're going to be tough. They're always going to be a tough out. They're going to play hard. They're going to try to run the ball. They're going to try to beat you off. That, none of that's going to change. That's their DNA.
Yep. Chris, I got 8-9 also.
And
I also
win, and they'll win some games. And Mike Tomlin will suffer his first losing season. Now, I thought it was going to come last year, but he eked it out.
Me too. I say 8-9 as well.
Yeah, I think 8-9. And I'm giving them 8-9 and not 7-10 because of Mike Tomlin.
Right.
I'm giving them another win because I'm like, Mike Tomlin will compete for that winning season right to the last week.
Right.
Like, it'll be in question. And I think this is the year where it finally runs out of gas. Because I don't believe in Kenny Pickett. I see Kenny Pickett's ceiling as, hey, you know what? He's the 19th best quarterback in the league.
Right.
Like, he's not going to be horrible. He's not going to lose you games. But he's not going to be so dynamic that he's going to win you games.
Right.
And to your point, you've got to have at least one rookie starting at corner. Question marks at linebacker. The defense, I don't think, will be quite as dynamic as everybody thinks. I don't think it's going to be bad. But I don't see Kenny Pickett, if you get into a shootout, being able, and that's what we are now as a league. The NFL is a league where you have to be able to win a shootout.
Right.
And so I don't see the Steelers as a team that can do that. They're going to try to ground and pound. And I know, smart coaches, they'll try to figure out Kenny's weaknesses and strengths from last year and play to that. But I got them at 8-9.
That makes a lot of sense. Working your way up from there, who do you see in third place? I've got the Browns at 10-7, but as a wild card team.
I've got the Bengals. I'm not the Bengals. I mean, the Ravens there.
Okay.
I've got the Ravens in third place because the defense is definitely sliding backwards. When you are desperately signing, you know, a Clowney to try to help your defensive end situation, this is a team that's going backwards defensively. I'm with you on OBJ. Everybody loved the talk last year about how they're like, man, Deshaun Watson hasn't played in nearly 2 years. Well, it has OBJ.
Yeah.
You know, so, and everybody's just like, oh, he's going to be amazing. Well, I've heard this before, right?
Right?
Like, I think we all just need to acknowledge OBJ was great for this window, and since then, he's been an often injured average wide receiver.
Right.
Who still flashes moments of greatness, but that's not who he is anymore.
Right.
And he sure as hell isn't worth $15 million a year.
Agreed.
But the biggest reason I'm going to push the Ravens backwards, all right? And I like Todd Monken. I do. But I feel like what we see going on here is we got to get rid of our old offensive coordinator because that was an antiquated system, and we need to be passing, and we need a new, you know, a new offensive system. But here's the thing, and I've said this since he was drafted, it's the Lamar Jackson is not Patrick Mahomes.
No.
He is not a passing quarterback outside the numbers. And I'm like, I view this as a matching of a talent. They're going to move away from the scrambling running Jackson and try to make him the passing Jackson, almost like they want to prove to everybody, you're wrong about him, Chris. We're going to show you, like, he is Joe Burrow. He can throw the ball all over the field with accuracy. Mm-hmm. No, he can't. And they've been a good offense because they were willing to be the contrarian. They built the whole thing around a running-based scheme and a running-based quarterback.
Right.
Now we're going the other way?
Mm-hmm.
I don't buy it. I think this is another one where the national media is like, new offense, it's going to be more explosive, more dynamic. They got OBJ, they got Zay Flowers. Oh, I like Zay Flowers. I really do.
Right.
But I'm like, who's throwing him the ball?
Yeah.
And I can't buy into it. I can't, Rick. Like, okay. I think they are going to have an offensive regression. And I think defensively, they keep regressing a little bit each year, and patching those holes, and coming. And they've got some good players on defense, but not enough, right?
Right.
So I've got the Ravens tumbling down into third place because I think that it's going to be a mismatch of the quarterback's talent with this system.
Okay.
I just think it's been a lot of yay, rah, rah. Everybody believe the hype that we're going to totally switch our offensive system and we're going to just be way better.
Okay.
I'm not buying it. So I've got them tumbling backwards, actually, to 9-8.
Okay.
Missing the playoffs.
Okay.
Again, I still think that they are enough talent, enough good coaching to be above 500. I don't want to completely just, you know, crap all over the Ravens.
Right.
They're a winning culture, a winning organization. They have some nice pieces there. You know, almost every year I love their draft, right? I mean,
right.
Not a year goes by that I don't lament the draft that they had, the picks they make.
Right.
But I still think that this is going to be kind of an experiment. And sometimes experiments don't go the way you hope. So right. I've got them at 9-8.
Okay.
Second place, I'm going with the Browns.
Okay.
I know a couple months ago I said to you 9-8. I'm going to slightly revise that up to 10-7 because of what I've seen out of the defense.
Okay.
I really like what I've seen so far with Schwartz and how this, and especially because they went out and they fixed the tackle situation.
Uh-huh.
There is no other team in football that has four starters on their front, on their line, their front four, that all grade in the top 20 of PFF.
Okay.
Nobody else, but the Browns have four of them.
Wow.
They now do with Shelby Harris. And in fact, actually, if you look at their rankings, it's like nobody within the top set. They have everyone within the top 17.
Okay.
You've got Garrett at 1, Smith at 10. I think Harris was like 14 or 13 last year, and then Tomlinson at like 17.
Okay.
Like nobody else in the league has that. And you saw Jason Kelce after the joint practices this week in Philadelphia say, hey, nobody in this league has what the Browns have right now. He was like, that's a good front. And if Jason Kelce's going to come out and say that, I'm going to believe him. He's been around. He knows his stuff. He's a pro bowler. He knows a good defensive front when he sees it.
Sure.
So thank God they went and got Shelby Harris, right? Like that other tackle position, I kept going, this is going to be another gaping hole. Like, but now, with him there, you can push Maurice first and Jordan Elliott down into rotational.
Right.
And they don't have to play 50% of the snaps, right?
Right.
Because we know Schwartz wants to rotate guys in and out, in and out, in and out, keep them fresh. So I like where we're at, and we both know this. The better your line play, the better your linebackers are. I believe JOK is going to have a good year because he's not going to have O linemen on him. He's going to be running around free. I like the fact that, you know, we've got Anthony Walker back. I like his leadership. Do you remember last year in Game 3 when he went down?
Yeah.
I said to you, oh, we're screwed on defense. That was our defensive leader.
Sure.
That's the guy that everyone's screaming about Myles Garrett isn't a leader. I'm like, no, he's never been a leader, and he's not going to be a leader.
Right.
Our leader on the defense last year was Walker, and when he got hurt, that was gone.
Right.
And it showed, because the defense in the first 2 weeks, I mean, other than the Jets debacle, wasn't horrible, but when Walker was gone, it like went to hell. So I like where we're at. Obviously, our secondary, Juan Thornhill, is an upgraded free safety because he's going to play exactly what Schwartz wants in that position in this defense. We've seen a little glimpse of that in the preseason. Their corners are outstanding. I came into last year with concerns about Denzel Ward. I have them again, you know?
Yep.
Like a little bit of regression out of the Warden. Like,
yep.
I need to see something out of him this year. Otherwise, I would say to you, Martin Emerson is our best corner. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think he's good. Now, I do have questions as to whether or not how Emerson will fare in a man-to-man, heavier concept. I kind of considered him stronger in zone, so that's a little small question mark there with him. Okay. How does he adjust to playing more man-to-man? He may rise to the occasion and be like, no, Chris, you were totally wrong. Okay. But I do have a small question there.
Okay.
I think we have corners and safeties that are far more suited to playing more man than zone, and that's what Shorts wants to do. So I think we have this good marriage. I think you're going to see a defense that's going to be way better than last year.
Yes.
And I mean significantly better. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be desperately needed to keep the Browns in games in the first 6 weeks.
Right.
Because I think the offense, with the new offense and the new parts and pieces and the new scheme, the blocking scheme for the O-line, you know, more to pass versus run. We have a great offensive line on run blocking. I worry with this inside zone that they may not be as good. Everyone's like, oh, best O-line in the AFC, maybe, you know, top three in the whole league. And I'm like, we don't know that with the new scheme.
Right.
Now, do we believe in Callahan? Yeah, we do. But, I think that's also, like with Emerson, scheme question mark. Like, okay, we don't know yet. I think there is still a legitimate question on Watson in terms of where his comfort level in the pocket still. And I think that the offense won't really be fully clicking the first few weeks. You and I know this. It's exactly my same thing when I just critique Baltimore, right? We're implementing a new offense, and I want everyone out there to understand something. Bill Musgrave was brought in for a purpose.
Right.
This is not going to be the same offense that we saw last year, right? With like two extra plays.
Right.
No, not at all. There's going to be the inside zone running out of the shotgun, which, by the way, Nick Chubb will excel at because Nick Chubb excels at everything. Mm-hmm. He is just a superhuman being.
Yeah.
Like, Nick Chubb can do anything. You know, paint your house in an hour, done. You know, fly without wings, done.
Yeah.
You know, inside, you know, run out of the shotgun, done. Like, there's nothing Nick Chubb can't do.
Right.
So I don't worry about him. The national people they don't know how to process Watson. They want to hate him. They want to shit on him. They're like, oh, well, he's not going to be any good. The Browns are going to be in last place because he wasn't any good. We saw the six games. I'm like, Aaron Rodgers was shit for, or not shit, but not very great for 17 games. Yet we're all like, he's going to be great again.
Right.
So Deshaun Watson had a shaky six games where we're like, that's it, he's done. I'm like, okay, let's pump the brakes. Here's the big part that's missing on what happened to the Browns last year that nobody acknowledges, right? They all just say, well, rust. I'm like, it wasn't just rust. Yes, he was rust. The biggest problem was this, and you saw it. They ran one system. They ran the Stefanski system with Brissett. Watson comes back. What did they try to do against Houston? They tried to go to kind of like what they're going to run this year against Houston because that's what Deshaun likes, right? So they shifted complete gears, and the whole offense was out of whack against Houston.
Right.
These guys hadn't been practicing it. That wasn't their playbook all year. They were, and so it was a mess, right? And so they immediately went, oh, God, we got five more games. We've got to go back to the old system that the other 10 players know, and Deshaun's going to have to adjust to, and he's going to have to play in that system. And that's what they did. So then guess what? The rest of the guys were like, okay, we got it, and now Deshaun was shaky.
Right.
Because this is what it was, his comfort level, it's not what he did, and that's why those games were so disjointed. Everyone's like, it's just rust. And I'm like, no, you saw in the Houston game, they tried to do stuff differently, and they abandoned it immediately because it went so bad. So, last year was just kind of a mess with the two quarterback situation.
Right.
Well, so it's going to be much smoother this year.
Well, the one thing that I'll say is this. There was a scout that I had read, and I'd love to credit who this is because I'd just love to be able to credit it, but I don't remember who, that pointed out, and this wasn't something I noticed, but I wasn't, as you know, watching the Browns with a fine-tooth comb at that time, that even in a clean pocket, Watson looked a little shaky, looked a little bit kind of rattled sometimes here. So that goes to the whole thing of can you just step back into the game after that much time away?
Well, that's exactly right. I think that was a function of two things in my mind. That was, yes, that was the near 2 years of not playing at a regular season NFL speed game, right? Like, he was struggling on processing. You could see processing was, he was staring guys down. He was, like, it was not good, right?
Right.
But also, I think some of that was he was running the Stefanski scheme, and he wasn't comfortable in it. He wasn't comfortable with his reads and his grasp of that offense, right? Because I think they had him preparing for what they wanted to run with him for when he got back, right?
Right.
And they tried it in Houston. It was a mess, and they abandoned it. Right. So now they go to the next week, and he's now running something. He's like, shit, I spent the last 6 weeks prepping for this wrinkled offense that was going to be the Deshaun offense. And now we're going back to the Jacoby offense. I didn't study that the last 6 weeks. Or I didn't study, let's call it half of it, right? Like, let's pretend there's a foundation and then there's the topper, right? Okay. I think that's why he struggled. Like, the reads were bad. You saw a few flashes here and there. Because maybe they called a couple plays, like that second half against Washington. Like, he suddenly looked a little bit better, right? Like, you suddenly were like, oh, where's that? There's that guy, right?
Right?
Like, they did a few things a little differently to try to help him. So I don't think any of that's going to be an issue this year. I still think there's going to be some rust, right?
Right.
He had six shaky games. We had a full offseason program. You know, the vast majority of his legal issues are all behind him and everything. You know, Roger Goodell's giving him tummy rubs at the Hall of Fame. I think his comfort level leading the team is far better. And what we saw against the Commanders is one series, he looked comfortable. They didn't run anything terribly interesting or sexy, but they moved the ball down the field. He looked at ease. There was no, and I know it's vanilla stuff, so you're going to look more comfortable. But had he been out there on that and he looked shaky, we'd all be crapping ourselves as Browns fans.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He looked fine. He looked completely comfortable. He, you know, didn't look like the game was too fast or anything. So I went, you know, I saw that and I went, phew, you know, like, okay.
Right.
He, you know, I, we're going to be all right. That said, I still think when it comes to new offenses and new systems and everything, and the way the preseason is now just not full preseason the way it used to be, I think the Browns are in for a, you know, a 4, 5, 6 week working that offense to where it needs to be. The Browns will be a better team at the end of the season, and they need somehow in weeks 1 through 5 for that defense to keep them in games and give them a chance to win, you know, to be, you know, 3-2 or something like that. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
That defense has got to do just enough, and they've got to be good out of the game, which I actually think they might be. They are going to have to kind of really be the seawall while the offense is still trying to get its legs. But I think by the end of the year, the offense is going to be clicking. I think the defense will be fine. I think at the end of the year, the Browns are surging towards the playoff spot. That's why I have them in second place. That's why I'm picking them at 10-7.
Okay.
And my prediction is your first place Bengals will be the first place Bengals in the AFC North at 11-6, because in week 18 in Cincinnati, they triumph in a bruiser of a game over the Browns to win the division.
Okay.
So they will finish by winning that game. Both teams come in 10-6. Browns come out 10-7. Still make the playoffs with tie breaks. And the Bengals win by virtue of that game, win the division, because they have the recent DNA of winning those types of games. The Browns don't have that experience yet. So that's how I see that playing out, right all the way down to the wire.
Wow.
Okay. I've got the Bengals winning the North. Look, I think the Bengals got kind of a similar situation, right?
Yeah.
I think the Browns will be helped by the fact that Burrow's not practicing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's still some questions on the Bengals run game, and I think the Browns defense will be able to handle it fine in week one.
Yeah.
Which is going to put the ball in a slightly, I'm not going to say rusty, but a Joe Burrow who hasn't had a lot of preseason snaps, right, in week one.
Yeah.
And then you combine the fact that the Bengals defense in the secondary, they have all new safeties, and that defense that they run is a complex defense.
Right.
And I think when you have brand new safeties against a system that they don't have any real looks on what they're about to see, because we're not showing it, and it's going to be a different offense. And they can make some guesses based on Houston's offense when Watson was there. And they can make some guesses on what Bill Musgrave has been about as a coach. But they don't really, they have no film on what we're going to throw at them. And you're going to have safeties that are newbies, no experience on the back end of that defense. And I think that's where the Browns eke out a win in week one at home over the Bengals. Because Burrow won't be quite as sharp as he normally would be because he hasn't gotten any of the preseason reps. And I think the Browns will handle the run, their run game. And I think the offense will be able to do just enough with those new safeties and an offense that nobody's got to look at to be able to win that first week and kind of spring themselves forward in terms of, you know, getting a jump on the season, surviving their first test. And they're going to have some struggles in the next few weeks, but I think the Browns eke out that win, and that's why we get to week 18, and it's all on the line. But the Bengals have question marks. Everyone's like, Bengals are going to be awesome. You haven't gone to the Super Bowl. Spoiler alert. But again, I think those safeties and stuff, they'll be better at the end of the year for the Bengals than they will be in the beginning.
True.
And we've seen in the past the Bengals under Taylor kind of struggle a little bit in the first week or two. You know, last year at home, they got beat by Pittsburgh. You know, they struggle a little bit in the first couple weeks under Taylor.
Right.
And I think we're going to see that again. And I think the Browns get a very rare week one win out of the gate. That said, Bengals still have a lot of talent. They've got a new tackle. They should be better up front. The Bengals still win the division because the Browns will not quite be prime time in the first half of the season. The Browns will get on a run late season. They'll come into Cincinnati, and Cincinnati's experience in big games will win it out over the Browns' inexperience in big games. And so the Bengals will win the division narrowly over the Browns.
Interestingly. Okay, so you said I had the Bengals going to the Super Bowl. That was my pick at the time. Spoiler alert, that's not my pick anymore because I think Burrow is going to miss some time. The way that I had it previously, Bengals 12-5 division champions, Baltimore 11-5, wild card, Cleveland 10-7, wild card, Pittsburgh 8-9. And looking at it here, what I've got now is I'm going to say Baltimore 12-5 as division winners, Cincinnati down at 10-7, because you and I disagree about week one in terms of if Burrow is going to play, not play, what that would do to the outcome. I think if Burrow plays, the Bengals win the game. I don't expect him to play. I give that game to the Browns. So that's a game that I had as a win for Cincinnati that I no longer do. I think Cincinnati is going to lose a handful of games before he gets back in. It knocks them back to the wild card pack, and that is obviously going to affect that. It's basically a domino effect through the AFC as far as how I see that shaking out.
Yeah, we're not far off. I mean, on that, you've got obviously the Ravens a little stronger than I do. Yeah. I just think obviously that at some point, a whole new system, the Ravens, it's just not going to work, at least not on the beginning of the season,
yeah,
the way that everybody thinks it's going to.
Yeah.
I think Burrow plays week one. I get your point. If it's Trevor Siemian against the Browns in week one, if the Browns don't win that game, then by God. Like, I mean, and that's where I worry about the Browns from the leadership psyche standpoint, right?
Right.
They have, look, counted on paper, I could say to you with a straight face, it's a 14-win team. But we know that's not the whole equation.
Right.
And that's the problem with the Browns. I worry about leadership, right?
Right.
Don't worry about it as much on the defensive side because of Schwartz. As much as I, in the past, have been a Stefanski homer and love him and everything else, and wanted him to get the job the first go around,
right,
Sterling would have got it the second time around, I do worry that his sort of, you know, Terry Francona coma type personality filled with a team of beta males just doesn't work in terms of being able to overcome adversity.
Right.
I worry about that. It is a need of testosterone, etc. That's Mike Tomlin's strength, right? Like, Mike Tomlin is not a strong X's and O's guy.
Right.
Mike Tomlin is a tough, sheer will guy.
Right.
Right? that's not Kevin Stefanski.
Right.
It's just, you know, he's monotone Kevin.
Right.
When great things happen, he's like, well, that was a pretty good play, and we're going to, you know, go back to work and stack some days. And if it was a disaster, it's like, well, we need to clean up some stuff and learn to stack some days and move forward. It's like, I don't know which is the difference in those statements. Like, it doesn't matter. And I think with guys that are emotional and in this space athletically, I do worry that Stefanski kind of doesn't translate, right?
Yeah.
And Schwartz being there on the other side of the ball, I think is going to be massively helpful what they want to do, which is they always wanted Stefanski just to focus on one side of the ball.
Yeah.
And look, that's not necessarily an indictment. There are a lot of coaches like that in the NFL. Zach Taylor's exactly like that, right? I mean, it's not just Stefanski that's sort of like offensive guy and head coach, but focuses really on one side of the ball and leaves the defensive guy to manage the other half of the ball. You know, I think that's not unusual to the Browns. I'm glad Schwartz is here. I'm glad they made the decision to make Van Pelt the quarterback's coach again, as well as OC, because Alex Van Pelt is a great quarterback's coach.
Yeah.
You know, Aaron Rodgers can't say enough good things about him. And I think that's also beyond the Bill Musgrave thing. I think that's the other coaching move beyond Schwartz that no one's talking about, but Alex Van Pelt back to focusing on quarterbacks in his role is going to be hugely helpful to Watson.
Probably. Yeah, and that's, by the way, though, the way that a lot of Browns fans who, again, are just so friggin', in love with the smell of their own farts on so many different things here, the way that they absolve Stefanski for the last year, well, that was the defensive side of the ball. What do you want him to do? You don't get to say that about a head coach. I mean, that's because ultimately that's where the buck stops.
And I completely agree with you.
Right.
Like, I understand that's not his strength and that's not his side of the ball per
right.
se.
Right.
But you've heard me criticize, like, things aren't going right on one side of the ball, and I look on the sideline and there's Stefanski with his face in the Waffle House menu.
Yes.
And I'm like, God damn it, put the thing down, throw your headset down, go over there and get your defensive player's face. like show some alpha tendencies.
Right.
You know? Men, whether it's military, football, whatever, want to be led, right? They want a leader.
Yes.
Right? And I just, look, there are times when Stefanski's qualities are really good, right?
Right.
He's never thrown a player under the bus. We just watched Saleh throw his whole entire offensive line under the bus.
Right.
We'll see how that plays.
Right.
Kevin Stefanski would never do that, and I like that as a quality about him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But there are times when it's like, okay, dude, you need to do something a little different here.
Right.
And to your point, you don't get to be absolved of any blame when an element of your team is misfiring badly.
Right, right. I had a big problem with that because, again, the buck stops with him, regardless of how they choose to segment it. And it may be wise for some teams to kind of segment it more so when the defensive coordinator is in charge of all that stuff and nobody interferes. But Joe Woods never merited that. And that's a thing where, again, that's where it has to come back to Stefanski. By the way, as you and I talked about off-air, and I have a little bit of a point to make on this, the whole thing, one of the big X factors right now, one of the things, I have the Browns clinging precariously to a playoff spot. The thing that is most likely at the moment to knock them out of that is the fact that, once again, as they did maybe a year or two ago, more uncertainty at the kicker position than any other playoff contender team out there, with Cade York basically Rick Antealing it in every game situation, even though apparently he's killing it in practice. And that's one of these things here where, like, people, I love FDH Lounge dignitary Bob Lasker, but emailing me that it should be Robbie Gould in there right now. Like, there comes a point in time where using somebody's name is demagoguery. Robbie Gould is not Robbie Gould anymore. Mason Crosby is not Mason Crosby anymore. I've always said this. Peyton Manning won one Super Bowl as Peyton Manning and one Super Bowl as Trent Dilfer. You don't get to use the term Robbie Gould and conjure up what he did when he was at that point. Robbie Gould is not Robbie Gould anymore. So this team has backed themselves into a situation right now, and you've made the point to me off air, yes, that you know they thought they had reason to ride or die with Cade York, but you must ride or die with him at minimum until early season when there's more kickers out there available, and to count on any one of those kickers coming in doing demonstrably better than Kate York is foul.
Well, yes, the names you mentioned, right? If Robbie Gould was Robbie Gould, he'd still be in San Francisco this year.
Yes, yes.
There's a reason he's not.
Right.
The people that I see online screaming Mason Crosby, I'm like, he's 40 years old and completely washed.
Right.
Do we not remember that, like, 2 years ago there was a game the guy missed, like, 5 field goals in a game?
Yes.
Like, I mean, like, let's look. Yeah, and then, you know, so somebody's like, well, he's, you know, historically, like, okay, great. You're talking about kickers last year that are now a year older that had, you know, they were 78% field goal kickers versus York's 75.
Right.
I'm sorry. There's no upgrade there. Like, that's just, no. The point I made you off air was, that, look, they are dealing with a mentally fragile kid right now.
Right.
And I think they're doing the right thing by saying all the right things and standing behind him. Because what else are they going to do, right?
Right.
You know, he's fancy to come out and go, man, he really sucks.
Right.
Every time he misses, I want to punch him in the face. Like, it's not going to help the kid.
Right.
And you know the Browns are, they've been very progressive on things. You and I both know that they've got a sports psychologist probably working with him. But I will tell you, I mean, they don't have a choice, at least for right now, to ride with Kate York. Because A, they didn't bring anybody else in. If they bring in somebody else in right now, I think mentally he would collapse.
Agreed.
into a fetal position.
Yeah.
So they're kind of stuck there. Now, there's 16 kicking competitions going on in camp. In 2 weeks, there's going to be 16 kickers cut loose. And I think that's when the Browns are going to have to bring in two or three of these guys to do some kicking. I think Browns fans are going to have to accept the fact that Kate York is probably going to be our kicker in weeks 1 and 2.
Right.
Will Kate York be our kicker in week 4? Right now, I would guess no. But right now, they're kind of ride or die with him, and maybe even weeks 1 or 2 before they finally have to cut loose. Now, to your point, he could cost them a game.
Yeah.
In what is going to be a very, very tight division. I won't get mad at a guy if you miss a 53-yarder, okay? It's
right.
A makeable kick, but anything over 50, I look at it as like a coin flip, right? You go, okay, well, that's, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
You're missing 38-yarders, 42-yarders, an extra point. You're costing us games. You are killing us, Smalls.
Yeah.
And the reality is that the margin of victory in the NFL last year was, I think, the smallest ever historically. And so these games all come down to the narrowest of margins. And if you miss an extra point in a field goal and lose by 2, you can look right at your kicker and go, well, you know, that's why we're going to, you know, finish 3rd in the division or 4th in the division.
Right.
And that's not acceptable. The Browns are in full-blown win-now mode.
Yes.
There is no middle ground here on the Browns this season. Coach is trying to save his job. Andrew Berry might be trying to save his job. You've got all this money invested, all, you know, they're playing for now. That's why they signed Shelby Harris.
Right.
They traded for, you know, Elijah Moore for now, right? And oh, by the way, just a little sideberry, I'll give Andrew Berry a little attaboy. I know he has yet to draft a Pro Bowler. However, you got to give him a tip of the cap for turning a 2nd round and a 5th round pick into Amari Cooper, Elijah Moore, and Cedric Tilton.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, that's some good GMing.
Yeah.
But anyway, I digress. Look, they're stuck with Kate York at least through week 1, and then we'll see. I thought there was a great point I heard somebody say on one podcast that, and I can't remember who it was, so I apologize. They said, I understand. Like, Kate York, 2 years from now, could be kicking for the Chargers and be an all-pro. And just, he's got the leg. We've seen it in his history.
Yep.
He won that Carolina game. He's like, that guy in 3 years may be the best kicker in the league. He's like, that could happen.
Yeah.
And Browns fans will be so mad. But his point was this. He's not right now. And we need right now in a brutal AFC and a brutal AFC North. We don't need 3 years from now. We need right now. And if right now he's a basket case in his head, we can't keep him around. Even if he turns out to end up being Morton Anderson,
right?
We can't keep him around. And I'm like, he's not wrong. I would hate to waste the pick. I still believe that the raw tools of what is Kate York are potential is so tantalizing. But to his point, when you watch Cade York kick, you watched it the other night, right?
Right.
Even the three kicks he made, he doesn't know where that ball's going.
Right.
That thing is a knuckleball.
Yeah.
He hits it, and the only reason any of those kicks made it was because every one of them violently hooked to the right. They just happened to do it just after they passed the uprights.
Yeah.
He got lucky.
Well, yeah.
You can tell, the first time they showed him, they had the camera in his face
yeah.
in the last preseason game. I could see the fear in his eyes.
Yeah.
Like, it was palpable. But like, he does not know where that ball's going.
Somebody needs to tell him that there's no bonus points for hitting a field goal as a trick shot. You know what I mean? Having that big curve at the end, no bonus points for that.
Well, and there are times when kickers know their stuff, know their hash mark and their distance, maybe the wind, and they've got to put that Vic on it. Like, yeah. You see that.
Right.
He's hitting knuckleballs. He doesn't know where it's going.
Yeah.
And again, I think that's mental because they say in practice, all week against the Eagles, he made every kick. He gets in there, his three kicks were shaky, he got them, and then he shanked the last two.
Right.
And you know, man, this is a kid with massive mental massive mental block. He is struggling. He's scared to death when he's out there.
Right.
And honestly, I don't know that you can fix him here. I think you may just be forced to ship him off, let him go.
Right.
And hope that the kid, for his own sake, clears his mind, goes somewhere else, gets confidence, gets his career back on track. Because I hate to say it, I don't mean to be a pessimist. As someone who, you know, I competed in sports at high school level, whatnot, I dealt with it myself playing, sort of silly, but squash in high school. That's a one-on-one sport.
Yeah.
I got into a funk for like 2 years. I couldn't win a match.
Okay.
I mean, I could win a match at practice, and when I was playing playing a player from another school, it kept beating in the back of my mind, I'm going to lose this match. I couldn't pull myself out of it. And I know where that kid's at right now. I mean, totally different level, and I get different sports, I get it. But I understand the mental problem he's dealing with right now.
Oh, absolutely.
And I don't think right now he can get out of his own head, and I don't think he can fix it. And I think we're going to be forced to cut him, you know, by the time we get to week three.
Yeah.
But.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. And I think I've referenced like a similar thing with me of back when I was working at the now defunct Cleveland Athletic Club as the bowling pro back there, and it had an annual competition with the Detroit Athletic Club guys every year, and then there would always be, you know, the Detroit guy against the Cleveland guy as a side part of the competition. In the first year, and everybody bet on me from my side, and I got waxed, basically. And then the second year, going up to Detroit, no pressure on me. Everybody thought I was going to get waxed again, but I got locked in practice through the first six, and I wiped the floor with them, beat them by 102 pins in three games. And it's like, I probably don't beat that guy if I don't get the clean air of a six-bagger to start. You know what I mean? It makes a difference. All these things psychologically make a difference. When you have clean air, everything is completely different. And Cade York does not ever have clean air when he's kicking the ball.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's all is that space between his head is just awful.
Yeah.
And like I said, until there are those 16 kickers out there that they can pull in, they're stuck with him for now.
Yep.
So anyone listening who's a Browns fan, you know, that's the reality. You know, don't let it ruin your weekend. If you're not a Browns fan, Rick and I are sorry for the last 10 minutes talking about a kicker.
Well, listen, it's an interesting thing. There should be at least one team you talk about this with every year because it is an interesting subject, and there's at least one playoff team whose playoff hopes potentially hinge on something like this. It just happens to be the Browns this year, the team that you and I probably know the most about from living in the market, and we were able to speak on it there. But, yeah, I've got Baltimore coming out of the division as my revised pick, Cincinnati and Cleveland as wild cards also, so I might call this a potentially slightly tougher division than the AFC East, but I think they're neck and neck. How do you look at it, Chris, one division versus the other for potentially the toughest in football?
I think that they are pretty neck and neck. I'm going to go say dead even.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't really see it any different. They are, it's you could parse one way or another and argue one way or another and slug wounds one way or another, but for all intents and purposes, they are the same creature.
Exactly.
They're going to be brutal, it's going to be competitive, and it's going to be tight to the end. With one team kind of always behind the others, you and I think it's New England and Pittsburgh. And I think we're going to be proved right about that.
Well, you know, just to tie things together here, the kind of people on message boards who are saying right now that Mason Crosby should be the Browns kicker are the kind of people who spell it for all intensive purposes. They're the same guy.
Well, I don't know. Supposedly, you know, it's, yeah.
It's, well, you know. Irregardlessly of that, Chris, I think I will credit my best friend for that one, FDH Lounge dignitary Jeff Aslanich, with the irregardlessly. That's always a showstopper. But any additional thoughts on the 2023 AFC North?
You're gonna get in the first few weeks a real fight, right? Bengals, Browns, Browns, Ravens, Browns, Steelers. I mean, it's coming. The North is coming at us hard and fast right out of the gate.
Yeah, it definitely is. No question about it. And this one is going to go right down to the end, I think, for the divisional title and the rest of the playoff spots. Oh, the last note that I have is this. This is a point I made off air to FDH senior editor Jason Jones. Something I find amusing. There is, I think, December 17th, give or take, basically, there's a Browns-Bears game, and it's like, you've got to go back several decades, probably at minimum the 60s, to when the Browns and the Bears played that late in the season, and there's likely to be playoff implications on the line for both teams. Decades and decades, Chris.
Yes, December 17th, Chicago at Browns.
Yeah.
We'll get into it in a little bit. I'm not as high on Justin Fields as the rest of the world, apparently, so...
Okay. Well, we'll see.
It may not have the implications you think it's going
to. Well, we'll see. We'll see. Because, like I said, you've got to go back a number of decades, probably, to when they played that late in the season and to when it potentially will count that much. We'll get to that one subsequently here, but right now it's been the 2023 AFC North. Our look at it for this season. Thank you very much, Chris Galloway. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this FDH Lounge mini episode.